Thank you
for
joining me at New York Wiki's Women Heard Changemakers podcast. This is where I get the privilege of talking to folks like you, Christy, industry changemakers. I get to invite you to join me and share your human stories of resilience in the face of change as we fight for growth, but maintain our humanity and progress ideally with those things both not being mutually exclusive. You can drive growth and keep your humanity intact. Christy Vandenbosch is a friend of mine. We had the pleasure of working together back at MXM, which is now Accenture Song. This is where Christy was chief digital officer and I was managing director of new business development at the time. This was around 2013. And Christy, you were really leading the digital convergence for MXM of mobile, social, and content. It really was quite a fun time as all these things were coming together. It was a moment of rapid change, as I'm sure before, during, and after, your career has just had to embrace that one step at a time. Thank you. Thank you for coming and joining me today.
It is incredibly privileged to be here. I just couldn't be happier.
Thank you. It's such a joy to have you here. I'm going to tell the audience, if they don't know, just a little bit about you because you have such a fabulous career journey. Early in your career, you were CEO of Publicis and Halrini and North American president of TBWA, Shiat Day's digital practice. And then after MXM, where we were both at for a while, you went in-house to Revlon, where you built and led their internal agency and digital center of excellence. And, you know, at New York Wiki, we often like to talk about how we embrace non-linear career journeys in the world of marketing and comms and agency and publishing and all of that. And yours clearly wasn't linear either. What I find is so interesting is how perfectly that entire experience has set you up for your role today. Christy is US president of Oliver. Please, Christy, tell me in the audience a little bit about what you do at Oliver.
I will. So Oliver is a very unique company with a very special business model. And it does literally one thing and one thing only, is it designs, builds, and operates agency capability inside our clients' businesses. So if you think about being able to finally outsource the business of in-housing, and I talk to a lot of big brands, and we work with probably half of the Fortune 500 around the world. And I talk to them about, you know, their intentions behind bringing these kind of capabilities in-house. And it means a lot to businesses now. It's a really kind of a core business strategy. And I always say, like, you guys are the very best cat food manufacturer in the whole world, but have you ever run an agency before? And they're like, well, no, but how hard can it be? I watch my agencies do it all the time. So it's really a business in which we are arguably the only valid competitor in it. And it's really just a marvelous thing to get to sit really close into the heart of a client's business and get to have that much sort of trust and privilege of sitting next to them, whether actually or metaphorically.
Oh, it's amazing. And you've had that inside the house, the agency, and everything in between. It sets you up so perfectly to understand the value of this inside agency model, but also all the challenges that come along with pulling it all together. This is not an easy role that you or any of the Oliver team are in right now.
It's actually a really unique time. And I think our model is very well suited for the time. To your point about sort of a non-linear journey, I actually started my career as a creative director before I changed sides of the business. And I basically lied about everything on my resume and dropped off the fact that I'd been creative because I was really interested in trying out the business side of things. And having spent a long career in sort of large holding company agencies, you have the risk of like falling out of love with something that you are very, very passionate about. And I love the advertising business so much. And I started to feel really compromised about it. And my journey into going client side for that 1 year inside Revlon was one in which you never know what you don't know. And it was a moment of understanding what you could do inside a business when you had that, again, sort of privilege of sitting at the heart of it. And when I came out of Revlon, I have told this story before, but I was speaking at an ANA conference, and the ANA obviously doesn't want you to talk if you don't work with the brand. And I had left Revlon relatively recently. And I said, you know, if you want to withdraw the invitation, I totally understand, like, no big deal. And they're like, no, could you still talk about your experience starting an in-house agency? And I'm like, I think so. It's like my intellectual property. I think I can do that. So I was coming off the stage, and there was a guy waiting for me at the bottom of the stairs. And he said, I think we should have a beer. And so he's now my boss, spoiler alert. But he explained to me what Oliver did. And I'd never heard of the company before. And I said with like all wide-eyed honesty, it's like, this is the only thing in the world that makes sense to me right now. And so we consulted for a while because I'd started a business and I was actually doing work with both brands and agency side people. And I kept going back and working with Peter again. And finally, he's like, I think you're supposed to come and work here. I'm like, oh, please, please, can I? And it has been literally revelatory. It's been almost 4.5, almost 5 years now. And I've never felt like I'm on the right side of marketing again.
That's amazing and wonderful. And as you said, it's a testament of this is the time, right? This is the time, the skill sets that are required that need to go inside, and also the understanding of what can live outside, but we're in a very different time today. It's not an either or, generally speaking, it's an and. And if you have the organization and the wherewithal in terms of your size and scale, the ability to bring it inside and actually impact the business with the insider knowledge that you have is incredibly powerful. There's, as you know, there's so much telephone that goes on sometimes in this industry that we're in. And when the world is evolving so rapidly on the outside, how can you possibly imagine to keep up when you're 1, 2, maybe 3 steps away?
Yeah. We talk a lot about, you know, the briefs that never get written. So the ones that if you are in an agency across town and you're sort of waiting for a brief to come across your transom, you're not going to necessarily always know what the actual business problems are. And when you sit with this, again, it's such a privileged place to be. When you understand what it is that they're facing every day, you can actually have solutions that have nothing to do with a brief they would ever have written for an agency. And I think that is, again, one of the most interesting things that in-housing has unlocked for big brands and businesses is that ability to have really creative solutions to things that they might not have solved in that way before.
Yeah. Having myself worked on both sides of the fence and not with nearly as much experience as you have, I completely, that statement that you made resonates with me so clearly. That fact that you, as much of a wonderful agency partner that you can be, you're always that distance from what the core problems are. And even when you're inside, it's sometimes a little challenging to figure them out, but you've got that much more of an opportunity to be actually solving the problems that really matter.
Yeah. And clients benefit from that distance that their other AOR partners bring to the table. Like that ability to have a provocative outsider view is really important to them still. And I love the way that we exist in this ecosystem where we sit sort of in the middle of the two. And it's really like they're our most important partners, honestly. We have to be so collaborative with them. And it sounds a little cliched, but like if I don't work well with the outside AORs, like I don't work. And so that has become, again, an interesting different. And I sort of learned this when I went inside Revlon. When you sit in big holding company agencies, procurement people tend to be your enemy. And so it was really interesting to have them be my like greatest ally inside. And I went to the woman who was running it at the time and I said, I want to actually help you write statements of work for our agency partners because the brands are still going to work with them. I understand why and I understand how. But let me keep them from wasting time and money. So let me actually write the SOW with the fact that this in-house agency sits alongside them and exists and is going to change what they've done historically, but let me make it a plus for them. So they can actually go ahead and focus on what they do extremely well. They can do it profitably and they're not going to waste a second doing something that either they don't value as a business. Like they're not going to resize banner ads or point of sale materials. They don't want to do that. That's not why people go into advertising agencies like that. And they don't have to pitch ideas that we're never going to buy. So I would literally write the statements of work for the businesses and I would go through it with the agency leaders. I'm like, I know exactly what you're trying to do, and let me make sure that you do it as well as you can and as profitably as you can. I'm on your side.
I love that. And a really good inside the house agency relationship person is like gold. When they're focused on the right things, they are incredible. I've met a few of them throughout my career that just are remarkable people. You clearly are a problem solver. You're cutting through the noise, getting to the reality of the problem and the issue. And that to me aligns really nicely with what it means to be a change maker, because I think you can only impact change when you're very real about what the problem is. And what you just shared with me just really illustrates that. Let me cut through the clutter. Let me get at the real problem at hand. I am more concerned with moving the business forward than anything else. And it's about the work, and it's about setting people up for success. And when you take that approach and that mindset, you can move mountains. But moving mountains is not always easy, and bringing people along is not always easy. And sometimes when you have everything in place, something comes along that trips you up. It could be a failing economy. It could be
COVID.
Yes. It could be an amazing client you have this wonderful relationship with that then decides to leave because they've got the best possible job for them that they could possibly get. But you're left in a tough spot, and you've got to sort of zig and zag a little bit and figure out how you're going to navigate the path forward. One of the things that I really like to engage the women that come on this podcast in is sharing these stories where things might be tootling along, but like the rug got pulled out from under you a little bit, or something like COVID or something else came along, and now you got to dig deep and you got to figure out how do you navigate, and how do you do that not only for yourself personally, obviously for the business, unless it's a personal thing that's come up. Although, how can we differentiate personal from our work? It's really almost impossible. And the people around you, the people that you're responsible for, right? Your team or the teams that rely on you. Are there such examples that come to mind to you, Christy, of places or times, environments where you've had to sort of navigate this kind of choppy waters?
I'll do the sort of business side, and then I'll do the personal side. Imagine if your business model is running in-house agencies, and all of a sudden everyone goes home for COVID. And I had a moment where I'm like, our entire model is defunct. We literally have no business model. And what became so interesting so quickly is it wasn't really about the physical proximity. It was about this sort of emotional space that we held with our clients that was very different than the other partners that were in that agency ecosystem. And this became one of those moments where, and arguably up until COVID, every team that sat inside its client's business was pretty isolated from the other teams. Like, they didn't have any reason to communicate with one another. And so they kind of were their own, they were their own ecosystem. And what became apparent when everyone went home is the level of care and bringing together that we now would have to bring to that, because they were fully expected to embrace their client's culture and to live within their client's business. But Oliver was more of a mechanism than it was sort of a culture of its own. And so we had to take care of people. And it was interesting. I was actually talking to someone about this earlier today. I spent the first 6 months of COVID going to every single status meeting, virtually, obviously, of every single team in our company. And some of them happened every single day. And that just became the way you got sort of back in touch with what was going on in the business, that people knew that you were there and that you cared. And then we did a really kind of remarkable thing. And if you'll recall, George Floyd being murdered and COVID were kind of a simultaneous series of events that were so fundamentally jarring to humanity that it was just like a major point of inflection for us as humans inside a business. And our founder, Simon Martin, sort of set a path for the business, which is that his legacy for Oliver would be for it to be an actively anti-racist organization. And so we started to build a culture around that, and doing programming and conversations and education and learning and centering voices that are not normally centered in our industry. And we made that a big part of what our culture was. And it gave us a unique space in our employees' ecosystems of the work that they were doing. that stood for something. And it was kind of a remarkable transformation for us as a business. I was really kind of blown away by the whole thing. And it has stayed with us. It has stayed with us as what we are about. Our programming, our ERGs, sort of what it is that we do for our people is a really, really critical part now of what we were. We also gave people mobility, which we hadn't really done before all that much either. Because again, you sat inside your client's business, you were your own unit, you like ran it and everything was cool. And if you wanted a promotion or you kind of were ready for a change, there wasn't necessarily a lot of sort of lateral movement. And so COVID gave us that opportunity. Like we had a hotel and an airline client, and both of them were kind of like taken aback by the fact that their own business had changed fundamentally overnight. And they're like, we don't want to lose our teams. You know, is there a way you, because this could go on for a couple of weeks. And they're like, could we furlough them? Mm-hmm. And another big CPG brand was like, oh, shoot, there's a whole lot of e-commerce work that's going to need to happen right now. And we don't feel completely prepared for it. So we sort of retrained people to move from the industries they had been in to this new space and created like a 70-person e-com SWAT team overnight. And so that it was very transformative for the way we thought about what our role was in our own business. It was not operational. It was also very much cultural. And so I think that was a bit of a, and it was a huge change moment for everyone, but it was actually quite a profound one for us as well. I have been in two. Personally, I'm gonna use the word toxic because it's a good explanation for it, situations in my career. And I spend a lot of time talking to young, especially women who come up in our organization, sort of about things that are going to happen to them. Because when you're 25, you just don't see these things happening to you. And so I make the statements like, you are going to lose a job that you love, and you are going to be betrayed by someone in business. And you're not going to see it coming, and you're going to be shocked. And I just want you to know that this will not define you. You are going to have these experiences, and you will take them, and you will sort of learn from them, and you'll move on. And I was reading something the other day where it was a shot of Taylor Swift in Melbourne with 100,000, mostly young women, just singing every word of her songs out loud. And the poster had said, you know, isn't it amazing to see 100,000 safe girls? And I thought about that word safe. And it's like, that is in fact a very safe space for them. And that's what we have to do in our working environments, is create those safe spaces. Like they are going to have some bad experiences, but they're not going to have them on my watch. And so that is something I talk to them a lot about, is sort of how we control the environment around us, so that if a toxic situation either is happening to you or you're the cause of it, either one, how to get out of that situation. And I think that's the very best thing we can sort of do in those moments, is recognize that you are at risk of participating in something that you don't want to be a part of, and to have the courage to walk away from toxic organizations and toxic situations. I stayed in one for a really long time. They're like bad marriages. Like you can't imagine getting out of it. And then the day that you actually make the decision, you have this incredible like weight lifted from you. And you knew that it was bad. You just were sort of paralyzed by, you know, not being able to figure out what the other side of it would look like.
Yeah, and I can imagine there are a lot of women listening right now to this and empathizing and being reminded of those situations, or they may be in those situations right now. And the minute you flip that switch and decide just to walk away, you're right, everything drops off. It is a transformative moment, but it starts with talking about it. It starts with just being honest about it. Like you said, talking to young women that, yeah, this is going to happen. Yeah, you're going to find yourself in this spot.
It's going to suck. You're going to get through it.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't define you. It is something that most of us have all managed through in some way, shape, or fashion, and come out of the other side of it better. And we owe it to each other as women in this industry to not turn a blind eye and to be comfortable enough and allow our vulnerability to be in the forefront, to say, oh yeah, I've been there, I've done that.
I think that means so much to especially this sort of generation coming up, is to see the leaders that they respect and admire basically say, oh no, all this shit happened to me too. Like I've been fired. It's awful. You're going to get fired too someday. It's going to be awful. I like to tell them the story about getting fired, because I think it's actually a really good thing to, again, sort of understand what it feels like. And I tell them about getting let go from a job in which my boss scheduled a Friday morning meeting in a conference room. And you know what that is. And the conference rooms in this particular company happen to be right off the reception area. And so the receptionists know. And so I walked by the three women who sat there who were always so lovely and none of them could make eye contact. I'm like, it's okay. I know what's coming. And so I happened to get into the room first and I'm waiting. And my boss comes in and he's like flustered and he's like shuffling papers around on the table. And he said, I forgot something. And I said, is it Stephen, the HR guy? And he literally went completely white and he went and got Stephen, the HR guy, who was already in tears. And he said, you've done a really great job. We did everything, you know, you've done everything we asked you to do in this company. We really appreciate everything you've contributed, but we are going to eliminate your job. And I'm like, okay, I understand. It's a business decision. And he then had the absolute audacity to say, how would you like to spin the story? Would you like to tell people that you're going home to spend time with your family? And you can edit this part out if you want, but would you like to fuck right off? I swear to God. And I looked at him and I'm like, no, this is a strategic decision that you've made. I think you own this one. You're going to have to tell people that this was your decision. And he honestly thought that I was somehow going to, like, I needed the out. Like, I don't need the out. I did a good job. I did the best job I could do. You've made a decision and maybe it's the right one, but it's yours. You own this one, not me.
God, the audacity. That reminds me, and again, I had a very similar experience. And
tell me.
I was choosing to leave the organization. It was a moment in time when it was not giving me or offering me what I deserved or what my value was. And so it was time for me to move on. And I found out later in a rather circuitous way that the story that had been fielded or seeded amongst the leadership and up to the most highest of ranks was that, yes, I was going home to have a little bit more time and space for my family.
Meanwhile, and by the way, if people want to do that, I want them to.
Yes, of course.
The automatic projection is just so insulting.
Yes, and clearly, especially in this case, obfuscating the reality of why I was leading. It much, much easier. Oh, so the other thing that I want to mention too, seeing as you brought it up about just the acknowledgement and the acceptance that at some point you will get fired. I think the other thing that I always try to tell people, and this is of women and of any age, really, honestly, you get into an organization, you put the blinders on and you sort of just keep doing a good job, is that your network is so important and your network of other women is huge. I was about to get fired from one of my jobs. And I reached out to a woman, actually part of the New York Wiki network, and she said, come see me that morning. Just come have a cup of coffee with me before you go in. And that 20 minutes I had with her with that coffee took so much of the anxiety away, gave me back my power, and enabled me to walk into that room and handle what I ever I had to handle and walk out with my head high.
I love that. I used to think that, you know, networking was a guy thing. Like it was something that men did at golf clubs and I didn't understand it and I just would never understand it. And then I realized that really what it is, and I'm going to say this with all due respect, it's like getting old. You eventually know everybody. And it is such an incredible value. And that's why, like, if anyone wants a meeting with me, and this is pretty much universally true, whether they're inside the company or outside the company, if someone wants to book time with me, I take it because it's the best investment I'll make. And they'll probably listen to me tell the same dumbass stories that I tell. But if it helps and they feel like they've got someone to go to and someone that maybe has some gravity and some, I don't know, some power in the world, I want to tell them that I got them.
That's a beautiful thing. And take the word networking off of it. If people get hung up on that word, you know,
it sounds so mercenary. Yeah,
it does. It's just about having a little common interest and curiosity about another human being. And if you go into any conversation like that, it's magic. You know, I think about in the kind of environments that we work in and how important it is to show your vulnerability, to be a strong communicator. And I think that goes hand in hand with it, and not being afraid to demonstrate and share a bit of your humanity, a little bit of what you're all about or what makes you tick. I think it builds trust, which is so critical when you're trying to impact change. Do you have any other thoughts or advice for folks that are out there that are in situations where they're either trying to build something, get something up on its feet, or manage through some form of transition, and you need to generate some form of consensus? Anything that you would share that's worked for you, Christy? Because clearly this is something you've had to do an awful lot of.
I think to your point about vulnerability, it is about being honest that you're on a journey and you're asking them to join you. And there are all sorts of different analyses of leadership styles and people who lead through fear and lead through expertise and imitative. Like it has never failed me to lead through humanity. And the fact that I think about who I personally want to follow and the kind of personality and sort of morality and sort of behaviors and ethics that someone exhibits is really, really important to me. I could not work for someone who is mean ever again. I couldn't work for someone who was so focused on the business at the expense of the people that it felt like an in or unhuman sort of an environment. Like, I've been able to make these decisions over time about like what it is that works and doesn't work for me. And I think I just have spent so much time trying to become the kind of leader I've always wanted. And I've gathered something from everyone who's ever been a boss of mine, whether it's been a good thing or a bad thing. My very, very first boss when I was a creative director, she still runs an agency to this day in the Detroit market. Her name is Janice Rosenhaus, and she's one of my dearest friends. She was literally like a sister to me. And she is, without question, the most generous human being I've ever met. Generous in spirit, generous in time, but generous when someone's in trouble, especially. And I cannot tell you how many people she has scooped up in that Detroit market who, very senior executives who lost a job in a very prominent industry where there's everyone knows about it. She would literally hire them to be a consultant the same day. She didn't need them for anything. She just knew that there was a point of being able to help someone with the thing that she had, which was a business, and being able to, again, generously give of what she had. She's just the most exceptional human being. And I think that has been, again, something, an important lesson that I took forward. I try to be a little bit more like her every day.
Oh, I absolutely adore that. Everything that you just said, I echo it and try to mirror that as much as I can and find my way to the good, the kind and reasonable people that are recognizing that, yeah, you can be a work geek and get excited about the work, but at the end of the day, we are working for each other and working to enable human beings to live the lives that they ultimately want to live and the outside world, whatever that may be. And, you know, it's
a big responsibility.
It is. I think it's also remarkable how many people don't actually realize that. It's kind of strange. So, you know, we'll start to wrap this up. When, you know, you obviously have this big job. You're running these teams. You're being a strategic partner. You're being a friend and an advocate for those around you. This can be kind of exhausting. I also happen to know that you are still recovering from a foot injury that has had you on crutches for some time, which that in itself I'm in awe of, that you you know the spirit that you bring with you and the can-do attitude of so what the fuck, I have a thing on my foot.
I can still host a holiday party.
Exactly. But I want to ask you about personally how you replenish yourself when you feel a little depleted, when you need to replenish your energy. Are there people that you turn to? Are there things that you turn to? Things that help you, you know, when you're a bit worn out and you need a little bit of boost?
Yeah, it's a great question. And just to be clear, and in case anyone cares, I rolled my ankle crossing the street and broke it in three places. So that's why crutches for so long. I am a classic only child in that I'm very, very comfortable with my own company, much more so than I think a lot of people around me that I who sometimes question some of the things that I do to recharge specifically. I run out of gas. If I have to be around a lot of people for a really long period of time, I am so depleted, like emotionally and psychically, that I have to literally just go be by myself for a while. And I can spend an entire weekend doing nothing but the New York Times crossword puzzles in perpetuity and be happy as a clam. The one thing I will do for myself that I enjoy probably more than even seems rational is on a given Saturday, I will go on to Broadway.com and I will buy the best ticket to the best show I can get. And I'm talking third row center. And in this case, money is no object. And in the days of a good ankle, I would literally walk. I live downtown. So I would walk and I would stop and I would have dinner somewhere along the way. And it's a good anywhere 60, 70 minute walk. And then I would see a show and then I would walk home. And it was just one of those things where I get so much joy out of being in this city. And this city is so special. And I didn't get to come here until like 6 years ago. And the fact that I only am like still new to it all, but getting to walk it, especially at night, and marveling at like the thing that I just saw and kind of I've seen plays where literally I've been walking home and it's 11 o'clock midnight, whatever it is, and I'll stop dead in the sidewalk and go, I can't believe what I just saw out loud to myself because I'm there quite happy as the single ticket holder who just had an amazing experience by myself. So I tend to do things that refill my soul alone, and I'm actually really I need that for myself.
I just adore that. My last question for you, Christy, when you look ahead, we're in 2024, it's Year of the Dragon. It's going to be exciting. There's a big election coming up. What sort of excites you or perhaps even terrifies you about what lies ahead this year? It feels like it's going to be a really good year, despite all of the crazy.
From your mouth to God's ears, I am flat out terrified. I have experienced something in my lifetime that I never thought I would, which is, and I don't mean to be dramatic, but I feel like it's the near collapse of things that I've taken for granted. And yes, democracy, yes, but like the validity of the media, when we have actually created a world in which truth doesn't have any meaning anymore. I never saw that coming. I never saw it coming. And I think I see hope. I see a lot of hope in like watching sort of Gen Z come up and become politically involved and active and opinionated and understand what is at risk. And I've also been incredibly disappointed by people who I thought were good, rational thinkers who understood the magnitude of what is at stake, sort of either treat it blithely as though it were not anything that was actually going to happen that they needed to worry about, or to fall into the trap of this, two alternate realities existing simultaneously. And a little bit back to the first question around what it is that we did as a culture in Oliver, and I talked about becoming this sort of anti-racist organization and really doing the work around that. I read the preface to the book, The New Jim Crow, and I had such a light bulb moment in that I had never really understood the notion of a system of power. And what it is that people and organizations that are powerful do to protect themselves. And again, I've never seen it so clearly demonstrated watching everything from people trying to restrict voting rights to healthcare to women's agency. Like I never thought we would see this day, and yet here we are. And so again, I have a lot of hope in sort of next generation. I have like when I'm done with this advertising thing, I'm going to run for office. Like that's what I'm going to do because I believe I could do that really well. So it is a, to your point, it's a terrifying year. It's also one that gives me hope, and I believe in greater goods, and I have to believe that the greater good will prevail. I've been fooled before, but
Yeah.
that's where I stand. I'm the Year of the
Awesome.
Dragon.
Yeah. Well, I'm voting for you, Christy,
Thank
and
you. You can help run my campaign.
I would love to run your campaign, and I double down on everything that you just said, and just to say I'm excited for the reinvention of media. It's going to happen. I hope it happens sooner rather than later, but it
Yeah.
will happen. But boy, we have some turmoil ahead still.
We've normalized some weird shit.
Yeah, we have. Oh, thank you so much for being my guest today.
I would
Christy.
Do this for another 3 hours if you wanted to.
I would love that. I will encourage the listeners to subscribe or tell a friend to listen in. You will not be disappointed. And folks, if you're listening, if you have any suggestions for any other change makers you'd like to hear from, please drop me a line at info@nywici.org.
Georgia, it was such a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
You've been listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser Ilkovich. Thank you to our incredible producer, Liz Roberts, and the amazing team that works on this podcast: Chelsea Orcutt, Chrisanne Grisey, Mandy Carr, Alex Fetter, who wrote our original theme music, and all of the wonderful volunteers on the podcast committee. A special thank you to Donna Jean Plant and everyone at New York Wiki who supports us. For more information about New York Women in Communications, including how to join and all about upcoming events, go to nywiki.org. That's nywici.org. And please take a moment to rate and review our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.